smoke myself and drink all my wine.
Eric's weekend in a nutshell.
Not this past weekend. I'll tell you about it.
Okay, it's a message in the bottle brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street, downtown Bangor. Eric Meehan with us.
Hey, all. I feel guilty even talking over that. So good. Yeah, so in point of fact, I was actually going to, it's a good lead-in because I was going to talk about this. Hi, all. Hi, everybody. Happy Tuesday. Happy anniversary to my wife.
14 years?
Get that out of the way right away, lest I run out of time and forget. That's not acceptable. Yes, 14 years. And 20 years together and 14 years of what it
was. 20 years? You're like Carrie. What took you so long?
That's a very funny question. You know, and it was only, actually, it was funny. We were just kind of doing our thing and living together. And it was, we at one point lived, on the property that was, my grandmother had this, the house and then two cottages behind her house. And we were looking for an apartment. She's like, oh, they could live there. And, you know, I guess that's just what young couples do. And I was like, Jesus, my grandmother has kind of given us our blessing to live in sin, as it were. You know, it just didn't seem, like it was uber necessary. And then, I think, Christine especially sort of started to have a longing for home, and actually started to, you know, talk about wanting to go back to Bangor, and it kind of made sense to me. So eventually I asked, but it didn't, you know,
it's gotta be the right time.
Like, it was like, you know, I always actually felt kind of odd about it, but in retrospect, I have a lot of friends. Like this summer, I just attended my friend Jack's wedding in the Catskills, as we had talked about several months ago, I guess, at this point. And you know, I guess the impetus to get married is not there anymore because the stigmas aren't there anymore.
Exactly.
And that was actually kind of cool. And subsequently, we got to plan like this great wedding. I mean, actually, we were just talking about the Aurora Borealis. We're just out recently here. Yeah. The night we got married, over the place we got married, the Northern Lights came out.
That's a pretty good omen, it would seem.
We still joke to this day that we're karmically in debt because, like, I don't know who arranged that, but you know, you can't really do much better than that.
No.
So you know, it's been pretty good, and of course, our two children, 99% of the time, are the blessings that have issued hence, and the other 1% of the time, you know, they know it and we know it.
Right.
So it's all good. This past weekend, I did want to mention, and it was really cool, and I'm mentioning it hopefully because I can get some local momentum behind this. We were a sponsor of the Maine Cheese Festival, and no one knows what that is or that it existed, and that's my point. And hopefully in the future we can change that. But this is the Maine Cheese Guild, and I think this is the fourth or fifth year they had done it. But the first year in central Maine, and I think the impetus behind that was that most of the producers are more in this location because, frankly, farmland is cheaper and things like that. And the attendance from the Bangor, the more the northern central area, was not great. We talked about that, but there was a lot of interest amongst civic leaders here. And the guild to do something in Bangor, but it was really cool, and I recommend that, you know, the next time it rolls around, folks up here do check it out. It's a lot of cheese. it's a lot of cheese. We were the sponsors of the cheese bar, which was like giving people a plate of cheese, and then they would go around to, oh my gosh, they must have had at least 30 cheese vendors plus others, and everybody was sampling. So it could be rough on your system. So we brought chocolate to sell instead. But
nice.
It was very cool. If anybody out there in Radio Land is listening and thinks that's something cool, I think it'd be great for the waterfront. So the next time you're chatting with your local representatives or whatever, do make a push for that, because I think that would be a great addition to the community. And obviously, as a cheese merchant myself, like, I thought it was really neat to, you know, it's always a good chance to get to meet the producer. You know, I try to do that with wine. It's great to do it with cheese, things like that. So as I said, folks, check it out. It's really cool. So today, as we've mentioned and heard, we're going to California, back to California, but not going back to Cali because that's LL Cool J, and I'm sure we'll get there when I run out of other California song ideas. But today we're going to sort of talk about the origins of the California wine scene and what it is and where it came from. And in order to get to the California wine scene, I usually start on the East Coast because that's obviously where we first kind of landed and started to figure things out. And our forefathers, especially Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, a lot of these guys who were ambassadors to France, especially Thomas Jefferson, really, really fell in love with French wine and tried to make the East Coast of the Americas into Bordeaux, essentially. And the vines kept dying. And they said, all right, well, we'll try to plant a different grape here or something like that. And the vines kept dying. And as we've, I'm sure you're guessing if you've been a frequent listener to this segment,
Phylloxera,
the dreaded Phylloxera louse, like it was living in the East Coast of the Americas and eating the rootstock. And then when we were sending botanical clippings back to England, to France, to Italy, we were sending this lovely bug along with it, and it ended up destroying most of their vineyards as well. Sorry, guys. but that's why the wine industry in the Americas didn't develop on the East Coast as so many other things sort of did, right? I mean, that's where the first cities were, first colonies, but not really the first successful vineyards. The first successful vineyards obviously were in California for the U.S. at least, and there was definitely successful wine growing of the same iteration down in the South Americas, and we will touch on that next month when we talk about South America. So the first attempts in California obviously were very much influenced by the same sort of things that were pushing wine in Europe at the same time, which were the religious orders. And specifically in San Diego, the very first vineyard established in modern-day California was established, the San Diego Mission, and it was founded by a Franciscan monk, Junipero Serra. And that was in 1769. But there were efforts even earlier. But you can tell, I mean, 1769, like we were already kind of deep into colonization and settlement of what would eventually become the United States of America. And so it's a little later in the timeline, but obviously it took hold much better there. Why? Well, our friend the Phylloxera louse was not in California originally. It wasn't anywhere on the West Coast. And so that allowed immediate transplant of all these, you know, these immigrants were bringing, well, the wine we're drinking today, of course, our favorite wine, Zinfandel, was, as I've mentioned several times, originally a grape from the region currently known as Croatia. It went down to the southern boot of Italy and is known as Primitivo there, but they brought clippings over to America, and now it's called Zinfandel. And, of course, there's the famous Mission grape, which you can still, in fact, we've tried it on air here, only it had to come from South America because there's precious little, if any, Mission grape still grown in California because they ripped it out for the more popular Vitis vinifera that we all like to drink. But it was, you know, it was a blessing, you know, I suppose if you're a Franciscan, you consider it a blessing from God, but the vinifera took hold, so everybody got to get their drink on. And new varieties were brought by new immigrants all the time. The Gold Rush certainly brought another wave of people. So you had Zinfandel, but you also had things like Mataro, which we know as Mourvèdre or Monastrell, and lots of others. However, by the late 1800s, Phylloxera did arrive in California because, again, you had botanical clippings. You had people bringing things. I mean, that's, you know, it's for the same reason as when you take your boat to another lake. They, like, want to make sure that it's free of contaminants because, you know, ecosystems, biosystems are very, very delicate things. And eventually Phylloxera got there. So that kind of beat them up real hard. And then we had Prohibition, which beat them up really, really hard as well. Any nascent wine growing operations that did not immediately associate themselves essentially with the church and say this is for, you know, communal services or medicinal, purposes, anything like that, you were out of business. And that obviously, you know, stunted the growth of California. Then there were, you know, a couple world wars, which took away an enormous amount of available vineyard workers and growers. The Dust Bowl happened, of course, in between. So just all these sorts of things that were both driving people to California and then taking them away. So the industry just never got a chance to take hold. But eventually, after World War II, and this is what leads up to what we talked about last week, the Judgment of Paris, a lot of European immigrants came and found land. First of all, they found freedom, and that was more precious, perhaps, even than the land they found. But they found land, and they found varieties already there that had been planted a while ago, and or they brought new clippings and planted and started to grow the sort of wines that eventually would go on to compete with the best things that France had to offer in the Judgment of Paris. And then later, you know, I mean, obviously, the California wine industry, now huge. 90% of all wine we drink in America produced in California. Pretty big. I'm running out of time. I would be remiss if I didn't mention that we are drinking the Grady Family Vineyards, Grady, G-R-A-D-Y, Grady Family Vineyards Estate Zinfandel. It's lovely. It's kind of old school because it's not big and in your face. It's actually got depth and interest. So kind of like what the sort of things that the European immigrants would try to make, you know, something that was familiar to them. And our tasting this month, on the 19th, we have our friends at Bangin' Whoopie. They came to us. Ooh. They said, hey, we want to do a pairing thing. I said, that's cool. Let's do that. So we're going to have whoopie pie pairing.
Oh, my.
Yeah. I'm pretty excited about that. We will also have a couple of savory things to temper the sweetness. We're going to try to do this. And so, yeah, well, I don't even know what I'm going to pair yet. I'm gonna force myself to taste these whoopie pies, figure out what to pair. I know.
Wow.
I know. You all feel very badly for me. You should. You should. But I'm going to do it for you.
Thank you.
And then on the 19th, I hope to see you all in our store so that you have to go through the same pain that I did. Talk to you next week.
You're a trooper, sir. Thank you. Eric Mann, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company. Message in the bottle every Tuesday, and all of Eric's segments can be found. They're archived right on the website at downtownwithrichkimble.com.